This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/beherenow.
Hi everyone, this is Chris Grasso with the Indie Spirituals Podcast, hosted by the Be Here Now Network, and my guest today is Sarah Bueno. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris.
Yes, I am really excited to have you on the show, and I will tell our audience why in a moment, but before I do, I want to read your bio to give listeners a little background about yourself before we jump into things. So,
sounds good.
Excellent. Sarah Bueno is, let's give some professional letters here for what you are in, LCSW, also CADC, also CDWF, and is the founder of the Head Heart Therapy, a group therapy practice in Chicago, Illinois. She is also an adjunct professor for Loyola University in Chicago and Fordham University in New York. She is a licensed clinical social worker, certified addictions counselor, and a certified Daring Way facilitator. Sarah also hosts a podcast called Conversations with a Wounded Healer that discusses the intersection of being a caregiving professional while seeking one's own healing. Sarah is passionate about helping people in their most authentic, live their most authentic lives by searching for their own truth. Sarah is a lifelong learner, anything in the realm of psychology and spirituality. In her spare time, Sarah is a musician and sings in a variety of musical groups around the city of Chicago. She also loves tattoos and changing her hair color often. And that might be a little bit of a key why I'm really excited to have her on the show right. today. But yeah. I do also want to mention really quick, you'll find these links on the Be Here Now page. Just scroll down and click on them. But in case you're listening elsewhere, you can find Sarah on Instagram at Head Heart Therapy. On Facebook, she has two pages, facebook.com/headhearttherapy or facebook.com/woundedhealer. And on Twitter at headheart_chi, or also at wounded healer. Now, I just want to clarify, the healer in these is H-E-A-L-R, not L-E-R.
I know. The E-R was taken.
It was taken.
I was so
okay.
heartbroken.
Yes. So, yeah, like my name was taken and stuff, so I had to do weird things, but I just want to verify that's correct. Okay.
It is. Yep.
So for anyone listening that's going to go check out Sarah, the healer is just H-E-A-L-R. And all of that said, Sarah, again, welcome to the Indie Spirituals Podcast.
I'm nervous.
You should be. This is so big time.
No. But you know what I did though? I made a bad choice. I'm not going to say I'm an idiot, but I made an idiotic choice.
Okay.
I've listened to your podcast for such a long time. When I knew that I was going to be on here, I listened to it with a different intention to be like, okay, I'm preparing to be on the show. And I scared the shit out of myself. So
Well, okay, let's throw all of that out the window.
Yeah.
Because here's the cool thing. Here's what I'm super excited about. Part of the reason I am super psyched to have you on the show. One, to let the audience know, Sarah had me on her podcast, about a month ago, give or take?
Yeah.
And we just had such an incredible conversation. We were introduced by a mutual friend, Sarah Beek, who has been a guest on this show and just one of the most amazing, authentic women on the planet today. So Sarah connected us, other Sarah Beek, connected me with Sarah Bueno. And I had a an amazing time. And I knew at the end of our conversation, I had to have her on my show. And here's part of why I'm excited, Sarah. Aside from the fact that we had so much fun on your show, more times than not, I have people that have like new books out or projects, which is great because I'm happy to support them. You know, I'm an author too, and I appreciate when people have me on to support my work. But in your case, we get to basically just have a rad organic conversation because you don't have anything currently out right at the moment. So we just get to shoot the shit and talk about whatever comes up organically. So that said, the way I do typically start the show, Sarah, is I like to have guests give just a little background about themselves and what led them to the journey or the path where they're at in life today. And that can be starting as far back as childhood, or you could start teenage, young adult. I leave it up to you, but just, you know, so we know how Sarah got to where Sarah is today.
Yeah. It's funny to think about, because sometimes I do think of my child self and kind of go back and be like, oh honey, hold on. Like life gets so much better.
Right.
Yeah. And I think like most therapists, my journey to become a therapist started with my own fucked up childhood. And I lived in a family where there was no active alcoholism. So I feel like it was almost even harder to put a finger on why things felt so strange.
Same here.
But my mom was a child of an alcoholic. And so that kind of got passed down. And my dad kind of had his own things he was dealing with as well. And I just, I always felt like I wasn't being seen. Like I would say, you know, the sky is blue, and I'd get back, no, 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 it's pink. What's wrong with you? everything's fine here. That was kind of the other message. And, you know, it really honed my ability to tune into, I'm going to say the word reality, even though I know that there is no one reality, but essentially kind of tune into reality, whether people were going to affirm that or not, which kind of helped become a good therapist. So I always wanted to be a therapist, but as a kid, I've always been a singer. My mom was a singer. So I grew up watching her sing in bands, singing in church and all that stuff. And, and I thought when I was a kid, I was like, I'm going to be a famous rock star, like a pop star, like Madonna, Michael Jackson, all those, like Janet Jackson. I was like, that's what I'm going to be, just because I had this, you know, well, if I'm going to be a star, clearly it's going to be a singing star.
Of course.
Of course. And so, you know, but I went to college and did the, what, you know, you're supposed to do is have a backup career. And I majored in music education. And then went into arts administration because I decided not to teach. And so I was working in the arts field for many years and just dealing with the craziest egos. And I thought, you know what? If I'm going to deal with crazy people, I'm going to really learn how to do this.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah. And in talking with my therapist at the time, I kind of revisited, wait, this is something I've always been interested in. I just didn't know how to do it. And when she told me about social work and that's how you become a therapist, I was like, well, shit. And I literally signed up for the next class that I could and got my degree. And now that I'm, you know, kind of owning my own company and doing speaking gigs and that sort of stuff and have a little bit of name for myself in Chicago, it's like, oh no, I wasn't supposed to be a famous singer, but I am supposed to use my platform, my performance experience to share messages of healing to people. And that's my life's work, you know?
I love that. Yeah. And it's interesting. You share about the your parents not being active alcoholics because, you know, working in the field myself, most cases, not all, but most have at least one of the parents as either an active alcoholic or addict that is struggling with that or other mental health issues. And I, too, am one of those rare cases where.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My parents. My mom's worst vice was smoking cigarettes, and she actually, I'm so proud of her, has been cigarette free for over 10 years now after trying many, many times to quit. I think I may have seen my dad drink a beer in my life, but it was very strange. I've always been the black sheep. Like, I know we have alcoholism in deep down the line in my family, but cousins, I have a younger brother, just no one. So not only was I the black sheep, like literally appearance wise and music taste, but, you know, I started experimenting and then, you know, became the family, you know, addict alcoholic. And it is interesting. So anyways, I just it's nice to talk to someone else who shares that. What now, I have something that part of what I learned through talking with Gabor Mate and someone else who commented on that conversation that I'll share about. But in your case, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with Gabor's work. I'm guessing you probably are. Yeah. Love him. Yes. He's been on the show. Anyone listening, if you're interested in this topic, search the archives because that was a wonderful conversation. But, you know, he talks quite a bit about childhood trauma, essentially basically only about childhood trauma being the cause of our addictions. And now mine goes back to something that happened when I was actually pre-born, when I was still in my mother's womb. But before I get to that, I want to hear from you a little bit about, so since your parents weren't active alcoholics, what have you pinpointed, if you're comfortable sharing? Because I know this could be, you know, vulnerable stuff, but we try to keep it real on the show. What kind of things, you know, have you been able to pinpoint that you're willing to talk about that you feel have or could have possibly contributed to going that route of alcoholic or addiction?
So, well, first of all, I am not an alcoholic in recovery. I'm an Al-Anoner. So that's my jam.
So I just, that whole,
that's totally okay.
The whole spiel was...
No, it's totally okay. Because, I mean, addiction manifested in my line in the family. And I don't want to out, you know, that person.
Of course.
I mean, the way that addiction and Al-Anonism is passed down is so fascinating.
Sure.
And, you know, my parents have passed away, too. That's kind of another thing that I say just because I don't want to speak ill of the dead, and that's never my intention for sharing kind of my experience of how I have come to understand myself and what happened to me and my sibling and all of that. And really, you know, my mom's addiction to perfection was one of the biggest things. Everything has to be perfect. Right. And what I find is, when you're affected by perfectionism of a parent, you go one of two ways. You either mimic that and you become the little perfectionist, or you completely shut down and run away from that, which is what happened in my family's case, right? Like, I am the perfectionist through and through. And then my dad, definitely a narcissist. And, you know, as of late, I've kind of realized maybe there was also some sex addiction too. So you know how the codependent and narcissistic go together, just like the codependent and the addict do.
Oh, of course.
It's very kind of predictable. And there was just, when my parents were still together, there was always this feeling, this lack of safety. And like I said, you know, I always felt unseen and unheard. Like it was almost as if my mom was constantly looking in a mirror that was right in front of me. And only seeing her own self and her own wounds and her own expectations. And then with my dad, we were just always afraid because he was just so angry all the time. So it was just a lack of safety and a lack of emotional security that really kind of did all the damage to both me and my brother.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And I appreciate you saying that. I also appreciate not speaking ill of those who've passed on, to save a little face. Since I was misunderstanding that you are not, one that has addiction. One thing I found is
substances.
Exactly. And that's what I was going to say, because Gabor, in the conversation I had with him, said, I have never struggled with substances. However, I have a very severe addiction to purchasing music. And mm-hmm. I would have never mm-hmm. thought of it in that context. But, right. you know, he says that addiction, I'm trying to remember verbatim, but the definition he gave me was something to the effect of any behavior. And he doesn't say substances. Mm-hmm. He leaves it at behavior that yep. results in negative consequences, yet we continue to do over and over again. And yep. I really liked that because, you know, people go about their days, you know, thinking of addiction, most people, as something that relates to drugs and alcohol. But right. yeah, like you said, not you're not related to or addicted to substances, but you might mm-hmm. have your own thing. And, you know, there are also healthy addictions. Like I see people that are addicted to the gym or addicted to meditation, mm-hmm. addicted to, mm-hmm. you know, all sorts of things. So, right. Yeah, anyways, just wanted to make that little caveat because also plenty of the audience that listens to the show, they're not in recovery either. They just mm-hmm. listen because I have weird guests on. And one other thing I'll share really quick is this wasn't on the podcast, but I was fortunate to interview someone who passed away not too long ago. He's a wonderful Trappist monk, and his name was Father Thomas Keating. Very, mm-hmm. very beautiful soul. And I remember this was about 10 years ago. I mentioned to him that during the interview, I was in recovery from drugs and alcohol. And mm-hmm. and I apologize to listeners who've heard this story because I have told it before, but he laughed. You know, he's in his mid-80s or so at this point, and he kind of laughed. And he's like, well, I'm in recovery too. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, shit, I didn't mm-hmm. know that. But then mm-hmm. he followed it up by saying, I'm in recovery from the human condition and yes. the, you know, different yes. degrees of severity to which that affects each exactly. individual. So... Yep. Yeah, when people think, no, I'm not addicted, hey, mm-hmm. you never know. Even Eckhart Tolle said, you don't think you're addicted, stop thinking. You know, we're addicted right. to our thoughts. And
right.
so anyways, that's a long tangent.
And even if, you know, the word addiction is so weighted, yes. I was talking to a friend the other day about the difference between an eating disorder and disordered eating. So yes. many of us have disordered eating. And I find for myself, I have always seemed to fall just shy of criteria for so many like addictive type disorders
sure.
that I would never qualify to, like my insurance would never pay for me to go to treatment.
Right.
Yeah, but they still can affect me in a negative way, and I still have to. I definitely consider myself in recovery, and absolutely the human condition. 100%. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, and that's the lovely thing too. I don't, you know, even though I'm in recovery, I never advocate for any form of recovery. I don't tell mm-hmm. people you should do one fellowship over the other
right.
or this or that. All I advocate is find out what works for you. But the interesting thing yep. is, I've met so many people that aren't quote unquote in recovery from drugs or alcohol, but have read either the Alcoholics Anonymous big book mm-hmm. or the basic text from NA or Refuge Recovery or whatever. And they have just found it to be supremely beneficial in their yeah. lives because they're really these blueprints for looking mm-hmm. at yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's another, in a way, another form of therapy, not to take away from the power yeah. that therapy can have.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank God for those programs. So,
well, it's all about self-awareness, right?
Right.
I can't remember what I was listening to, but they were talking about the difference between self-knowledge being like having the information and then self-awareness being able to kind of put the knowledge into action.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what can happen in the 12 steps that can be reinforced by therapy. But it's you know, practicing, you know, a program like Refuge or the 12 steps, I have been so consistently surprised by my clients because they'll come in and, you know, what I always say is we're going to give you the most conservative plan for success because we know what works, right? We know if you go to sober living, like if you go to meetings, if you do all these things, you'll likely stay sober. But not everybody needs that.
Right.
And I've been so surprised by people who just, you know, they don't do what I say, but they keep coming back and they're sober and they're living these wonderful lives. And so it's so humbling to remind myself, I don't have all the answers, and it really is a different path for every person.
I'm so glad you said that because, yeah, in my own books or talks or workshops, one of the first things I try to do is make it very clear that I don't have any answers. You know,
yeah.
all I can do is share my experience and mm-hmm. Listen and hold space and offer, you know, maybe mm-hmm. some reflections on what I've heard. But yeah, that's as. But I'm also not a trained psychologist such as yourself, and is a psychologist
social worker.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. But you know, I went to school and did all that, but I never got the formal degree. So mm-hmm. and I'm kind of glad that I didn't, because thank goodness for professionals, absolutely. But I also think there's so much to be said for peer support and
yes.
people, you know, that just yes. come in at that level. And like tomorrow, I get to do 3 workshops a month with teenagers, yeah. ages 13 to 20. We might have talked about this on your show, but
yeah.
you know, I go in there and it's equal parts heartbreaking and heart filling, because mm-hmm. here are these individuals at such a young age that, you know, I see the very deep cuts on their arms or hear about the suicide mm-hmm. attempts and the, you know, I've already died twice and it's just my goodness. But,
yeah.
you know, I can walk in there and, you know, being tattooed and pierced and mm-hmm. and luckily still having knowledge and experience, like mm-hmm. I automatically have their attention and we do some really deep work. So
yeah.
I'm really grateful for that. And I think that actually segues nicely, Sarah, into talking about spirituality, because I think part of the reason you and I connected it, you know, on such a deep level was we're very free spirits, as a lot of mm-hmm. people in the spiritual realm are. I might have even, I don't remember if it's your podcast or not, but I think I was telling someone in a podcast recently, even the word spiritual
yes.
can irk me sometimes. Yeah, that
yep.
was you. Okay.
Yep.
So, mm-hmm. but again, for lack of a better word, spiritual,
right.
we'll use it. So, what I've noticed, you know, I've been doing this for about 20 years now, visiting various sanghas and all just different types of spiritual, quote unquote, spiritual settings. Mm-hmm. And I have noticed a rather significant shift in from when I first started going. People mm-hmm. would often be very judgy, you know, kind of look mm-hmm. at me because I look the way I did. And, you know, and it was uncomfortable and unpleasant. And that was part of the inspiration that I wrote the books that I did, because I wanted to let people know, friends that I knew that might have been interested in this, but otherwise were turned off because of things like that, that it doesn't have to be like that. And here we
right.
are in 2019,
mm-hmm.
and I'm seeing so many more people like you and I. And I know I'm speaking right now just about the aesthetic or the relative level mm-hmm. where piercings, tattoos, colored hair, listening to punk rock, metal, hip hop, whatever, but still having a very sincere, very dedicated spiritual practice. And I'm mm-hmm. so glad to see that that is becoming more commonplace. And I have so many friends that in the past had no interest, and now like they're like, holy shit, I can still listen to Slayer and meditate, like, and
right.
be a, you know, live this like deeply more connected life to myself and mm-hmm. the universe. And yeah, you can. So I would mm-hmm. love to hear a bit about your experience with that, you know, because you are your own person, and that's why I deeply respect you. But you also are very dedicated to your spiritual life and mm-hmm. and practice. So tell me about that.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, you say some of your friends are like, wait, I can listen to Slayer and meditate, because
yeah.
I have felt, since I really started my spiritual journey, which obviously we've been on a spiritual journey our whole lives
right.
and lives before that, but really it was when my parents died in 2014 that things kind of shifted for me and I was open to spirituality in a new way. And since then, I've struggled to create a real connection between who Sarah is as a therapist and a spiritual person and someone on her healing journey and Sarah who sings in a band on the weekends.
Mm.
Because in my regular life, band aside, 99% of my friends are therapists or at least have some sort of psychology background. And so communication, we all know the same language. My husband's even going to school right now to become a therapist. So it's like literally everyone except for my dog. so language, you know, we share that and even when there's conflict, we know how to resolve it and it's very easy and that sort of thing. And in that part of my life, I'm really trying to work on ego and not being driven by that.
Right.
And then I go sing. And right now I mostly just sing in a wedding band. Mm. And my job is to like be larger than life and to entertain you. And, you know, the guys in the band are not necessarily on, some of them are, but not necessarily on like a spiritual route. And so conversations are different. You know, we're talking more about worldly things. It sounds so fucking elitist to say it that way, but I find it such a contrast, and it's probably less about spirituality in and of itself, but just the way that I've decided to create my life, to be comfortable. I need to know that people are really going to see me, hear me, and understand me. And most of the people who can do that the best are therapists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, so I see, you know, a therapist, and I do EMDR, and that is so important to me because just like you said, I need that. The interesting thing in my life is that even though, like I said, I have friends that have been turned on to meditation and whatnot that otherwise may not have, opposite to you, the majority of my friends, even though I'm pretty introverted and can't say that I have a lot of friends, I have associates, but, you know, the friends that I have really don't have much interest in spirituality. And I actually really appreciate that because I'm not encased in this bubble that I see happen for a lot of people. And I don't say that with judgment, but it does, like, people kind of are in this spiritual bubble, all their friends are spiritual, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, but it almost becomes like this Pollyanna-ish view or lens of life where it's easy to forget that there is some really ugly shit that happens every day on the regular. So
you're exactly right, and there are some times that I am grateful for when I go into a period of depression or anxiety or something like that, because it reminds me what it's like for my clients.
Yeah.
Because I've definitely 100% been in a room with a bunch of people in recovery, you know, saying this like rainbows and unicorns shit come out of my mouth. And I'm like, they don't get it. Like, I need to figure out how to communicate in a way that they can hear it. Not because I'm better than them or further along than them, but just because, yes, I'm in a bubble and I'm immersed in this in my entire life. And so I have to learn how to, I have to be better about talking to people in a way that they want to come along, you know?
Yeah. And I hear that for sure. And I think I struggled with that myself early on. And it just quickly got to the point for me where I had to realize zero fucks given. That's my motto. And in the sense that not that I don't care that I'm not helping, all I want to do is help other people, but I have to speak my authentic truth with and sincerely throw any, you know, completely abandon any worries about what, how I will be perceived. Because as long as I go in there with the intention in my heart of helping other people, and I do every single time, no matter what I do, then that's all I can do. And and I have to laugh, to be honest, because, you know, we're talking about music. I just joined a band recently. I haven't played in a band in like 5 years.
I saw on Instagram. Oh, that's so exciting.
It is. But, you know, so here I am, quote unquote, you know, a spiritual writer. Anyone that listens to this band, would be like, no, because it's completely noise rock, part metal, part mathy rock, stuff that I love. I still listen to this day. I played my first show with them like about a month ago. It felt so great. Like, and we're recording a new record next month. And that to me is just as spiritual as when I am sitting in meditation, as when I am reading, you know, Ramana Maharshi or Ram Dass or Vivekananda, Nisargadatta Maharaj, any of these people, any of these great non-dual teachers. And that's why for me, they have been so important and influential in my life, is that you mentioned ego before, and I still, of course, I struggle with that, but there's so much of the time, thanks to working with who am I inquiry, self-inquiry practice, or direct looking, reading people like Jed McKenna, and seeing through this illusion that, you know, there really isn't division. It's all, like I think you said, it's all spiritual. It's all been a spiritual journey, no matter what we're doing. It's just that our minds and our egos start placing labels and and deciding what's good and bad. And that's just a condition of the human mind. What underlies that is that that universal everything that gave birth to the entire manifest universe. And so that is where I try to approach every day from. And of course, Chris jumps back in the driver's seat and, you know, did I play well enough or did I do the podcast well enough? But in, again, just to circle back, it's the intention that is in my heart and that, you know, I can take the teachings from these teachers and do my best to be a bridge and share them with others in a way that might be relatable. And the last thing I'll say is, you know, as we're talking right now, I'm chuckling. I always do when I do these podcasts because here we are talking about, you know, spiritual stuff. And I joke with my fiance also, like, if anyone that read my books ever walked into my apartment, you know, I'm looking around the room. I have like horror posters on the wall. Yeah. Horror is my favorite genre. I have horror toys. I have like skateboards. I have like, you know, just all sorts of like, you know, I have really the only spiritual things I see are my books, which are extensive. And of course I have like, you know, Kali and Maharaji and, you know, the figures and statues, but that's only like 5%. The rest of it is just like Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees and guitar equipment and, you know, Alex Gray artwork. Yeah. And but that's what I love is that
it can be anything.
Yes, I'm happy this way. And it does not negate my spiritual life whatsoever. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hold the conversation hostage there, but
it enhances it.
Thanks. Yeah.
I appreciate, you know, I think right now in this moment, I am absolutely entrenched in my perfectionism and it's holding me hostage in a way. And so hearing what you're saying is so helpful. And just like remembering like, my intentions are good. And I do believe that my life's purpose is to inspire people and to, you know, give hope. And I do that. Yeah. and it is like you said, just walking in with tattoos and a shaved head and a mohawk, like, and different color hair every time somebody like falls in love with that. And then is like, I want what she has. And we know that that's how people get better is by, you know, wanting to create a level of health for themselves that they see in somebody else. And so it's, thank you for that reminder. This is why we had to have this conversation today, not to do the podcast, but just so I could get a little bit of healing. Thanks.
Well, you are welcome. But I have a sneaking suspicion some listeners might also, you know, be getting some help out of this. Both of us in no way is just what I'm saying. Yeah, truly, like to emphasize, be yourself. And that's one of the first things I write in my first book, Indie Spiritualist, is that it isn't about appearance. Like at the end of the day, I don't care if you have tattoos or piercings or colored hair. Like, Brad, if you do, that's awesome. I love that stuff. But what I really care about is what's going on in your heart. What are you passionate about? What are you doing in the world to help other people while also helping yourself? Like that is what matters to me. The other stuff, cool, that's fun, you know, and we can talk about movies and music and that's great. But at the end of the day, the stuff that truly, really, really matters is that heart stuff. And for me, that heart stuff manifests through the way I present myself and the way that I like really fucking strange things. And I always have, and I always will. And, or I hope I always will. Cause you know, that's just who I am. But you know, so anyways, who knew that'd be half the top, the talk today, but tell me about, let's focus more on you. Let's talk about head heart therapy. Tell me about that. What is head heart therapy and what inspired you to create that?
Well, I actually never thought I was going to go into private practice. My intention was to work in treatment centers forever because that group work is my jam. That is my favorite. And I love that early stage of recovery when people are starting to find themselves for the first time. Yeah. I just think that's so inspiring. But you know, life happens and I ended up getting the Certified Daring Way facilitator, which is Brené Brown's work.
Oh, awesome. She's great.
Yeah, she's great. And I was the first therapist in Chicago to have that certification. Nice. So I just happened to get a lot of attention for that. And so at one point I looked at my husband and I was like, do you think I should do this? Should I make the leap? And he's like, yep, let's do it. I'll support you and we'll make it work. And you know, the idea of head heart came from a tattoo that I have, funny enough. I was trying to figure out what is a pictorial representation of being a therapist. Mm. Like, how do I put on my body what I do? And this credit goes to my brother. He had a picture on his, it was his screensaver on his laptop, of a man being torn apart by one side a heart and the other side a brain. And I was like, ooh, wow. That's it. That's the pictorial representation. I take that to my tattoo artist and he's like, well, that's a really negative representation. How about we tie it together? Mm. And so the tattoo is a brain and a heart tied together with a ribbon and a key in the middle.
Love
so
that.
The key is connecting the head and the heart. And, and I'm sure you know the quote, you know, the furthest journey a man will travel is from his head to his heart.
I'm the poster boy for that. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of how the idea of head heart was born. And because of the way that I look and the attention that I get, you know, I've had people say, oh, you have a nose ring, so you're going to understand me. Or I literally last week had somebody email us because I liked the photo of her hair from her hairstylist posting it on Instagram. She's like, oh, your owner liked my hair, so I think I'll do well at your practice.
Oh, that's so great.
So I wanted to intentionally create a space for people who might feel a little turned off by what you would think of as traditional therapy. And, and that's not to knock anybody. Like you said, like not everybody has to have tattoos and crazy hair and whatever, but I do. And I want the people who also want that, to feel comfortable and to feel safe. And so that's how Head Heart Therapy was created. And our tagline is unique therapy for unique people. Mm. 'Cause I want everybody to feel seen when they're there. And clearly we have quite a thread drawn from my childhood to what I do for a living now. I want fiercely for people to be seen as themselves and to see themselves too. 'Cause I think that's something that can really, really get in the way in our culture. Like, talk about ego. If our ego is too pronounced, denial sets in, and then we're not willing to look at ourselves because we can't tolerate the shame.
Yes.
So I want to create a space where we can lovingly lead people through this journey of seeing themselves truly.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that and shame. But before we do, in a second, so you offer these services. I know you're based in Chicago. For listeners, do you ever offer anything? I know some therapists, not all, but some do, like Skype or phone calls. Do you offer that as well, or are you strictly Chicago based in person?
Yeah, I'm strictly Chicago, and also I'm not taking any new clients at this point.
Gotcha.
But one of the things that I am aspiring to is being able to travel and do groups.
Yeah.
So if you want to get a group of six or more together, let me know. I'll fly wherever.
Awesome. So there you go. And you guys already have, guys and gals have her connection, her Instagrams, her Facebooks, her Twitter. So let's go back to shame, because that is something, I mean, who amongst us cannot relate to shame and guilt, two separate things, but let's talk about shame. Actually, first of all, can you, because a lot of people kind of twist guilt and shame together, and they and they do go hand in hand in a certain respect, but can you offer listeners your opinion or your definition, or however you want to word it, of the difference between guilt and shame? And then what I'd like to do is, maybe, I don't know if you have a practice or something that's generic enough that maybe our listeners can take away. I like to try to give listeners something, you know, aside from a good conversation, but something they can implement in their lives. So starting with talking about the difference between guilt and shame, and then whatever practice or just anything you would like to share.
Yeah. So shame is I am bad, and guilt is I did something bad. So
easy.
Shame is
love that.
Right. Shame is focus on self. Guilt is focus on behavior. And Brené Brown's definition for shame is that it's the intensely painful feeling of not being worthy of love and belonging. Mm. So it's fear of disconnection, fear of not being good enough. And it, you know, it's hard to give a short answer to what to do with that.
Of course.
Brené Brown talks about the antidote of shame is empathy and being able to tell your story to people who can hold space for you and say, wow, I get it. I get why that's hard. Mm. But what I've found for myself personally is no amount of empathy from the outside is going to touch the wall that I've built around my heart, because I just have this chronic feeling of not good enough. Right.
Sure.
So self-compassion is crucial. And I spend most of my time talking to people in early recovery about opening up to the willingness to practice self-compassion. Right.
Yeah.
Because when I say it, like I just did a group yesterday at a detox. And when I say self-compassion for the first time, everyone's like, fuck that. I don't deserve it. Like, I deserve to be punished for what I've done. I am a bad person for what I've done. And what I tell them is you really, so I'll say, like, you know, look around the room. And is there anybody in here that you would say isn't worthy of love and belonging? And the answer is always no. They love their peers, right? Just like you said, you learn more from your peers in addiction than you do from anybody else.
Yeah, sure.
So if they look around the room and say, no, everybody in here deserves love and belonging, then, you know, I kind of turn it back and say, then how come you're not?
Yeah.
Right? You can't be the only one who's not. That's, we know in the program we call that terminal uniqueness, right? I'm so fucked up. Yeah. I win for being the most fucked up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So having that, I guess, you know, and this is the head heart piece. If you can at least understand that with your head, that you deserve compassion and love and belonging, then just ask for the willingness to practice it and just try to shift the way that you talk to yourself. Mm. Are you talking to yourself like a person you love, or are you talking to yourself like an asshole?
Mm.
Many of us are talking like an asshole.
Yes. And, you know, I actually have a chapter in Indie Spirituals called Hey Asshole, and it's just about that, how it's crazy to me that we allow ourselves to talk to ourselves in such a way that for most of us, if it was even a stranger talking to someone else the way we talk to ourselves, we would probably step in and be like, hey, that's not okay. Like, stop. Yet we allow ourselves to do that. So let me, not to put you on the spot, I really thank you, first of all, for sharing those, the difference and, you know, just as a general jumping off point. But that's actually a topic that I am going to be addressing tomorrow with the young adults. And it is one of the tougher ones that I do. So I would love to hear, let's say you're in that room. And in all fairness, you know, you have not worked with a clientele like I have. So again, I'm kind of putting you on the spot. But just selfishly, because I always love to hear other people's ideas and, you know, just curious. So say I start out by asking that question you did. And of course, I'm sure that 99, if not 100%, will agree, like you said. But then it becomes a matter of, okay, I hear what you're saying. And I hear that you're saying that, you know, I need to find a willingness to try to talk to myself in a nicer way. But, you know, I have done so much shit. I don't feel like I am worthy of even trying. What is something you might say to that? Or is there a different, like, teaching or something you would offer? And again, I know this is on the spot, so I apologize for that.
Yeah, no, this is how, I mean, this is therapy is improv, you know?
Right,
and
sure,
so I'm totally, my initial reaction, what came up for me is what I would probably say in the moment is, what do you have to lose by trying this?
Yeah.
And as a therapist, what I'm always thinking about is creating relationships with people. And so I think you and I both have this unique ability to walk into a room, not say anything, and have people feel connected to us because of that, because of the way we look, at least of the people that we work with anyway.
Right. True.
And so I really lean on that relationship when I'm challenging someone and, you know, sometimes I'll say, you know, well, how's that working for you, with humor, you know, to kind of get them out of the seriousness of it. Cause that's a serious question, right? Like, I really think I'm not worthy of love and belonging, but the function of the, what we assume the function of beating ourselves up is that we'll do better next time, but it's actually making it worse. It just reinforces the shame, and shame is never a positive motivator for sustained change. It's just not.
No, it's
really good at controlling behavior in the short term, but it's not going to create the lasting sobriety that these kids are hopefully wanting to look at. So what have they got to lose is what I would say. If you try this, just do it as an experiment. And I always tell people too, like, you don't have to take the shit I say seriously. You don't have to, but this is just an option for you. And it's my job to give you as many options as I can so that you can find peace.
We're so simpatico in our approach. I appreciate that. Yeah, that's awesome. And you know, like when I share things like that, it's a similar, it's like, you know, don't believe me. It's like the Buddha said, like, find out for yourself. But I approach it, I might include some pop culture to, you know, reference a song lyric or something, or someone who had a similar struggle, look where they're at now. And those sorts of things certainly seem to help. But even for those who, again, aren't in that exact circumstance, what I can say, you know, and by circumstance, I mean addiction or mental health issues, is I think for anybody, working through shame and guilt is of the utmost importance for our well-being. We can meditate all day. We can do yoga. And these are wonderful things. But, you know, something I learned is a big part of the reason I kept relapsing. And even after I worked on shame and guilt, it didn't keep me from relapsing, but it significantly decreased the frequency and the longevity.
But,
you know, it wasn't until, and it's uncomfortable, but it wasn't until I started to really look at those places within myself. You mentioned having a wall up around your heart or something like that. I liken it to my heart's armor, like it's very guarded. It wasn't until I began laying aside some of that armor and become willing to get vulnerable with someone I trusted, whether it was a sponsor or a therapist or, you know, whomever in one's person's, in someone's life, and started really sifting through that stuff, that the true deep healing began. So, I highly recommend that to anyone listening, whether, again, it is with a therapist or the thing I would say is try not to do it alone, because
don't do it alone.
Yeah.
Don't.
Because how many times, you know, have you experienced in your position some really heavy shit comes up with the person you're working with? And if you weren't there or someone wasn't there to help them process it, imagine, you know, like. And these are extreme examples, but the people I work with, and probably many that you do too, have already attempted suicide or struggle with addiction or self-harm, you know? And if there's not someone there to help them and they're trying to do it alone, not good, not safe. And again, that's not just for those who struggle with that. I would say anyone. What do you think?
Absolutely. I'm thinking of a particular client right now who I've worked with for the past 5 years, and we started our work together doing shame stuff, you know, and it's the big layers of shame. And then every time you pull a shame layer off, there's another fucking shame layer. You know, it's just, this work is never done, and you've got to have somebody walk through it with you. The thing that I'm sure you can say this working with as many people as you have too, the more work I do with people, the more I recognize we are all fucking crazy. Every single one of us.
We are. Yep.
And there's nothing that, you know, the person sitting on the other side of the couch has thought that I probably have thought too.
Right.
You know, we're all in this together. And so just having even one person who can really truly be empathetic and non-judgmental can transform. We are hurt in relationship, so we have to heal in relationship.
Beautiful. I heard something, it was, I don't know, several years ago, so simple, kind of cliche saying, but I'll tell you, it moved me. And, you know, it's simply, it's okay to not be okay. You know,
that's
because we, not only are we not feeling okay, but now we're adding self-judgment and then the guilt and shame, of course. And, you know, you start putting all of this together and you wonder why people's stress levels are as high as they are. And, you know, the amount of violence and just anger and you know, it's really saddening to me. And not that I don't still experience that, because I sure do. I am so fucking far from perfect, and I fall into the shame spiral, the guilt spiral, the, you know, and then on top of that, I have the I beat myself up because I should know better spiral.
Right,
you know,
it's right. Just, oh, yeah, exactly. That's the worst.
Oh, yeah. There's no way
the
out.
The meta shame.
Yes. It's like, come on, man. Just just breathe. Stop and breathe for a minute, you know. But
well, and that's where the compassion comes in, right? And I something happened over the past, like, 6 months. I had some really crappy business stuff happen. And all of a sudden, I was, like, actually saying, like, Sarah, I love you. And you do amazing work, and this really fucking sucks. And I tell you, Chris, like, there's, I asked my therapist once, like, what does self-love even feel like? Because I really don't think I'd experienced it. And she said, well, it's like loving someone else, but you feel it for yourself. And the times when I've been able to catch that, that's what I need in the moment and practice that, like, there isn't any other feeling like it.
Absolutely. You know, this has inspired me to just quickly, I believe we often do book recommendations on the page as well. And a couple that Corey, the gentleman who works on these, hey, Corey, he typically will kind of take recommendations based on the conversation. But I am just as we're speaking, there is a wonderful teacher. She is Buddhist, but one need not be Buddhist to benefit from her work. I don't consider myself Buddhist personally. I don't care if you do or you don't. Like, I've learned so many great things from Buddhism. I just, I don't identify as anything. So anyways, there's this wonderful writer and teacher. Her name's Pema Chodron. I'm guessing, and I'm guessing most of the audience is familiar with her. But in case you're not, and you are really resonating with what Sarah and I are talking about, I highly recommend three of her books. Any of her books are great, but the three that I've personally found, in regards to this conversation at least, the most beneficial are Comfortable with Uncertainty, The Places That Scare You, and When Things Fall Apart. Highly recommended. And then the loving, self-compassion, loving part, Sharon Salzberg, another Buddhist teacher. She, you know, is kind of the current go-to when it comes to loving kindness. She's much more than just that, but that's, like, one of the things she's most well known for. And I highly recommend her work in regards to that. Do you have any, Sarah, that you would like to recommend?
I do, to add to that list. Yeah. And I think they're both informed by Buddhism as well. So Kristin Neff, and that's an I, K-R-I-S-T-I-N.
Yep.
And Tim Desmond.
Don't know Tim. Love Kristin's work. Are specific books or just them in general?
Yeah, Kristin Neff's, she's got a great website, actually, where you can test your self-compassion.
Oh, wow.
And she's broken down the components of self-compassion so you can see what areas you need work on, whether it's the way you talk to yourself, your connection with others, or your mindfulness. Mm. So her website is a great resource, but her book is literally called just Self-Compassion.
Excellent.
And then Tim Desmond, he's written a book for therapists called Self-Compassion and Psychotherapy, but he also has a workbook. Mm. And I think it's something like 14 days to self-compassion or something like that. But cool. If you look him up, you'll be able to find his work.
Awesome. There's this other guy. I think his name's Chris Grosso. He's written a few books, but some of that touches on it. So. So, Sarah, you know, I never ever do that. I like to bust my own balls and be a dumbass. Yeah. So, anyways, we've got, you know, a few minutes left. What I want to turn this over to you. What would you like to end the conversation on? You know, we've got 5-10 minutes. What have we not talked about that, having spoken about what we have thus far, you feel would be an apropos way to kind of take us out?
I guess the one thing that I want to say to people is there might be a lot of fear, right? The thing that I see that gets in between people doing their work is fear of, you know, what's going to happen on the other side, or what, you know, if I look at my shame, it's never going to end. And there's a book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And I literally don't know who wrote it, but it's out there and you can actually just get a PDF version of it.
Oh, cool.
But I think that when we open ourselves up to connection with others for empathy and we practice our own self-compassion, that can really help settle the fear, but the fear is going to be there.
Yes,
right?
Of course.
I think you and I talked about this in my interview with you is, you know, people always ask me like, oh, how are you so brave and blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know, man. I was just born like this. But I can tell you that there's a lot of benefit to really digging in and doing this hard work. And I think you and I are very much the same that like we couldn't live without being this way.
Right.
And sometimes I look at people, I'm like, how can you not be this way? So I just want to inspire people to know that the fear doesn't mean that you shouldn't do something that scares you.
Couldn't
fear is
more.
Going to be there.
no matter what, but that's the thing is, you know, the feeling you get once you face that fear and you walk through it is second to none. Another cliche saying I absolutely love is the only way out is through. And I think of fear when I think of that, but it is true. But when you walk through that and you get to the other side, talk about a feeling of empowerment. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you do that and then you can, like we do, you talk to other people and you help them face their fears. You don't have to be, you know, a social worker or an author or whatever. Like we are all out here helping one another. I don't look at myself as any more of a quote unquote teacher or healer or helper than anyone else. You know, we're all in this thing together. We're all doing the best we can and we're all hurting too, you know? So let's just show up, help each other, face our fears, just try to be a little kinder. And now we're ending on this like hippy dippy bullshit.
But I know.
It's so funny, but I mean, really, that's where my heart is. Like, Slayer aside, that's, you know, and I know that. Yeah, I know that's the case for you too, Sarah. So you did mention your podcast. Where can people find that? I know we have all the links to your social media, but is there an actual website or a platform that it's on where they can find the podcast?
Yeah, well, it is on my website, but pretty much wherever you listen to podcasts, you're going to be able to find it. So, you know, Apple Podcasts and what is it, Google Play and Spotify.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So you mentioned your website, and actually, I don't see that listed on the social links you sent. So what's your website, Sarah?
www.headhearttherapy.com.
Beautiful. And just as a reminder, to find Sarah on Instagram, it's @headhearttherapy. Facebook is facebook.com/headhearttherapy or facebook.com/woundedhealer. Healer, H-E-A-L-R, no E there.
Healer.
And then the same, we have Twitter, @headheart_chi, C-H-I, or also at Twitter, @woundedhealer, same without the E at the end. Healer.
Yep.
So
Healer.
I can't recommend checking out Sarah's work. If you enjoy this podcast, I guarantee you 110% that you will love Sarah's. And if you don't, you get your money back. So,
yes. Yes. Money back guarantee for any podcast.
And I love saying that since people don't pay for them. So,
exactly.
No, but so sincerely, I had such a blast on yours. That's why I had to have you in mind. And I had so much fun with this. I hope you had a good time on the show too.
Oh my God. Yes, absolutely. And I really, really do want to figure out a way to get you out here to Chicago. I'm going to talk to some of the people to see if we can, like, you know, get a little thing, get your flight over here, take care of you.
Well, Chicago.
Yeah.
I might be coming to see you soon. So that would be super rad. Well, and vice versa. Well, you know, we'll figure out a way to get you to Connecticut. And that's what we do. We help each other out, you know, the people that are out there doing these things. So, you know, we'll talk more about that, you know, via email and good stuff. But Sarah, truly, thank you for the work you do in the world. Thank you for showing up as your authentic self. And thank you for this conversation and laying yourself out there vulnerably and sharing honestly from your heart and no bullshit. That's what the show is all about. And I honestly, from my heart to yours, no pun intended there, my heart to your head heart, I really, really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Me too, Chris.
All right, Sarah. So again, everyone, please check out Sarah on social media. Check out her podcast. You will absolutely love it. She's incredible. And until next time, we've got some really exciting shows coming up. Not going to tell you who yet because I like to leave people in suspense. But wishing you all a really lovely rest of your day. Take good care. And like I said, please just be there for one another. Love to you all. And until next time, it's Chris Grosso, Indie Spiritualist Podcast.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/beherenow.